Show do not necessarily represent those of WHFR or Henry Ford Community College. Good afternoon. This is WHFR Dearborn. You're listening to the show called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. And this month, my special guest is Jessica Hillman. She is a yoga instructor. Jessica, welcome to the show, and thank you for being here.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Very nice of you to show up. I know it was a last-moment type thing, but it was great that you can do the show.
I'm very glad to be here. Thank you for your time this evening.
Okay, great. All right, a yoga instructor. Now, how long have you been a yoga instructor?
I have been a yoga instructor since 2007. I started off at Rising Sun Yoga and took my teacher training there in 2007. But I've actually been practicing yoga since I was in high school.
Mm-hmm. So a couple of years, right?
Just a couple.
Yeah, right, okay. We'll let it go at that, right? Well, that's good, though, but what really drew your attention to yoga? What was it about that really said, I've got to do this?
Well, quite frankly, I had done the workout thing quite a bit, you know, the endless hamster wheel of a treadmill or an elliptical and whatnot. And after taking my first real yoga class with a real instructor and not a tape. I have to say, it started off as a DVD tape, right? That's how long ago. It was very curious that I loved it, and I was willing to do an hour and a half of yoga where 20 minutes on a treadmill seemed like torture.
Mm-hmm. But it was just the opposite with yoga. It was fun.
Yes, exactly. And just the feeling of centering and connection and really kind of tuning into your body really spoke to me. It was really important to me, especially as I was, you know, getting out of college and kind of coming into my own, that I had a good relationship with my body instead of, like most people, it seems to be adversarial.
Mm-hmm.
And really yoga, from starting to study it and this connection that I found, I felt it more at peace with myself and how I felt about myself.
Mm-hmm. I think it's always important to try to find something that you enjoy doing as opposed to forcing yourself, because that's work after a while, and usually you stop doing that, you start to resent it. So it's good that you found something that you can follow up on. And would you consider yoga exercise?
Yes, actually I would. I think it can be both a spiritual practice, and it can also be exercise. Yoga can be what you want it to be. And I think that's what draws so many people towards it, is the fact that you can take it at whatever level that you feel is appropriate for yourself.
Mm-hmm. So if you take a class and you have trouble keeping up, maybe you're not as flexible as some of the others, that's okay. Just do what you can and enjoy the moment.
Exactly. You're always working in your own body's paradigms. You're always working with where you're at on the mat at any given point. I mean, I can tell if I go to the movies the night before and I'm teaching class and I ate, you know, six Twizzlers the night before. It makes a difference in your body, your hydration level, how much sleep you got the night before. All these things are pertinent to your practice. And so there's days where things feel perfect on the mat, and there's days where you'll find yourself struggling, and that's okay. And really, that's what we're going for, is this idea that the connection and these signals that your body is giving you and that you're receiving in, that you're listening to them and staying within an appropriate level for that given moment and being in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that you have started to eat healthier since you started yoga? You really pay attention to your diet when you can?
I have to say, I think that's true for a lot of people, but I've always been a real healthy eater. Absolutely. My mom was kind of a hippie, so
okay. She was being... Go back to the earth, whole grains, all that good stuff.
Yeah, so, you know, she worked. My mom was a physical therapist, actually, and she worked all week, you know, 40-hour week job, but on the weekend she was, you know, going to farmer markets and baking bread and things like that on the weekend. Mm-hmm. So I was very lucky. Of course, when you go to school and you have homemade cookies, sometimes that Oreo is looking really, really tasty, and you don't understand why your mom is doing this, but being a mother myself, I would definitely take a homemade chocolate chip cookie over an Oreo any day of the week.
Mm-hmm. Do you do a lot of cooking yourself?
I do. I love to cook. I am constantly in the kitchen. I love to bake. I just really create. It's one of my creative outlets, and mm-hmm. it's kind of cathartic for me to just kind of go in there and create something.
Mm-hmm. Do you try to create healthy meals?
Oh, absolutely. Having three small children, I'm really, really cognizant of what they're putting in their bodies. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I'm constantly working to make sure that what they're eating is as nutritious as possible. I have kind of an interesting situation in my house because I have a teenage daughter who's kind of off on her own doing her own thing and starting to make her own choices with food, and then I have a four-year-old. So I definitely can see her branching out into areas that I don't always agree with, but...
Is this your oldest daughter?
Yeah, my oldest mm-hmm. daughter, yeah. That I don't always agree with, but, you know, she'll have to learn and find her way back into the fold at some point. If mm-hmm. she slips too far away.
Yes, she'll coach her back to the right side of the diet situation.
Away from the milk duds.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot to be said for milk duds. I don't know.
I agree, but in moderation, everything in moderation.
Right, that's true. That's what my mother always said, and that is true. You know, if you let anything get addictive, that's not a good thing. But now, getting back to yoga, you took a class, and once you took this class, how long did you do this before you decided that you wanted to learn how to teach it?
Well, I have been practicing yoga since I was in high school, and I kind of went away from it a little bit when I was in college and then kind of made my way back towards it. And essentially, I had a very stressful family situation that I was undergoing, and actually my physician recommended that I head back to yoga. So I started taking classes, and probably within a year, I decided to sign up for the teacher training program. And the teacher training program was about 6 months, and it was every weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, 8 hours on Saturday and Sunday for that six-month period, where we really studied yoga philosophy. We did a lot of anatomy, and did a lot of asana, where we were actually learning to teach and do the postures of yoga, mm-hmm. and adjustments and whatnot. And before I stopped, or very shortly after I graduated from the teacher training program, I was offered to teach yoga for children. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a natural extension, having kids and being around kids my entire life and being a kid myself at one point.
Right, it all fits in.
To teach children. And I really, really adore teaching my kids yoga class. Everyone knows that at our studio that's my true love, is being around the little ones. Mm-hmm. And it starts at 2 and goes all the way through. I have a teen class as well.
You mean it starts with children as young as 2?
As young as 2, yes. I've also done some mommy and me classes, which is fun. The moms are so, it's kind of interesting because it's kind of like what happens in yoga stays in yoga. And mm-hmm. at 2, you're not really so interested in.
Right. Well, that would be my question. How can you get them to focus on doing some of that stuff? I would think they'd be a little rambunctious and want to run around a little bit.
They do, and we just let them be how they are. They're in the moment, and that's really beautiful to watch. And I think we could take a active lesson from two-year-olds, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So you try not to strap them down or anything like that?
No, not even with the yoga strap. Okay. But we do have yoga blocks, which makes for some fun.
Mm-hmm. No, that's the amazing thing, something you touched on, is just watching young kids, the older I get, it's amazing when you watch them. They're so full of energy. They're running, they're jumping, they're hopping, and the adults with them are usually just kind of schlepping around and, you know, walking behind them. And
they're exhausted.
Yeah, exactly. But I look at these kids and I think, did I ever really have that much energy? And, of course, I had to have because I was that age at one time. But it's really amazing. If they could bottle that, that would be great and sell it. But I don't think that's possible. Getting back to yoga, what kinds of yoga are there?
There's a lot of different schools of yoga. It depends on what you're interested in doing. We do everything at our studio from, like I said, children's yoga all the way up to chair yoga. We do vinyasa flows, which is more of a meditative movement with the breath. We do senior yoga. We really run the gamut from 2 to walking in with aches and pains at 80 and even beyond that. So it depends on what the instructor is interested in doing and what really speaks to the instructor. And we kind of format our classes according to what our interests are and in the different realms of yoga.
Mm-hmm. So do you have a specialty yourself?
I do a lot of, you'll sense a theme here. My two favorite classes to teach are actually my children's class, my littlest children, which runs from about 2 to about 6 or 7. And then the other class that really speaks to me that I've kind of forged ahead with and just really worked at is a prenatal class. Mm-hmm. So I love to work with the new moms. And sometimes coming in at very early on feeling nauseated and concerned, are they going to be able to do this? Mm-hmm. Are they going to be able to make this? And yet somehow, you know, people are born, and it's just a beautiful process to watch and watch them respond to the changes in their bodies. Mm-hmm. I really find a great amount of pleasure in really helping them and giving them the tools that they need, whether they're spending that hour in class or something happens at home, that they know themselves well enough and they trust themselves enough to really reach in and take control of their bodies.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that it really helps the unborn baby to go through this as well? I mean, along with the mother, of course, obviously, but I mean, it's beneficial for unborn babies, do you think?
Well, I would say that the mother's well-being is the baby's well-being at that point, and that staying with the breath and giving that baby all that oxygen through your practice and feeling that sense of calm and trust in your body to create this other human, I would have to say yes. I mean, it would be great for the baby.
Mm-hmm. Real briefly, I just want to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Jessica Hillman. She is a yoga instructor. And my question right now, what I'm curious about is, when you work with older people, or in the past maybe you've worked with older people, I know you say that you prefer the young kids right now, but do you think it's beneficial for older people as well? Perhaps it improves their, you know, flexibility, things like that?
Absolutely. We do a chair yoga class, and we do adaptive yoga, where we work with all sorts of previous injuries and neck injuries and people who have limited mobility, where we actually tailor the class for certain issues that you might have in the body. We've done cardiac yoga for people who are post-cardiac episodes, yoga for asthma, mm-hmm. where you're really reaching in and learning how to breathe, and even just having that available to you, these skills, when you feel something, I'm going to say something coming on, where you can kind of manage it yourself. Not that I'm not recommending that you ever not seek medical attention for any of those things, of course. Right. Don't rush to your local yoga studio, but but post-situation or pre-situation, you can definitely help nip things in the bud and get things under control.
Mm-hmm. So in the long run, it's beneficial for anybody at any age, is that correct?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, how does that work in with meditation? How does that kind of relax the body and help the breathing and all that?
Yes, no matter who you are or where you are, and I do forms of meditation even with my two-year-olds, meditation brings you into yourself and lets you kind of rest into yourself. And I would maybe sometimes, I would definitely argue whether you're 2 or 80, that being in yourself is not necessarily a bad place to be, and that you can access different layers of yourself, whether you're 2 or 80, and that there's something about each person, and you know, you've probably heard the term namaste, like there's a light within that you can access no matter your age. And meditation allows you to quiet yourself in such a way that you're able to access.
Mm-hmm. Access what?
Well, since we stated at the beginning of the broadcast that the opinions expressed here.
I would say feel free to express your opinion.
I would say that you're accessing your inner divinity. Mm-hmm. You're accessing God. You're accessing, whether you're a Christian or a Muslim or a Jew or an atheist, that you're accessing this portion of you, this inner light that is hidden. Mm-hmm. As you're kind of walking through your day and letting your mind guide your processes instead of reaching within your heart.
Mm-hmm. Have you had people report to you just not only physical breakthroughs with the yoga, but also spiritual breakthroughs as well?
Sure. I think that there's a truth within ourselves, definitely, and that sometimes that can suddenly spill forward, absolutely, where you are in the moment and things become clear because you don't have all this chatter in your mind going on. And I think people know what I'm talking about. If you even just take a few minutes and you just try to count backwards from 10, you might make it to 7 before suddenly your to-do list springs to mind, or the fact that, you know, you can't find your black shoe or whatever, you know, whatever mm-hmm. it is, where this kind of process that you're accessing when you're meditating lets all of that kind of go into the background. And I don't mean that this will happen immediately. It depends on how much effort you put into it, how quickly you can decide to access your truth, I guess, is what I want to say.
Mm-hmm. So aside from doing the yoga, do you meditate separately every day?
I would like to say that I meditate every day, but however, that would be a lie.
Okay. So we are not going to say that.
Yeah, so we are not going to say that. I try to meditate as often as possible. I definitely do some pranayama, which is breath control, every day, where I take myself away and out of my situation, whatever it may be, and just really focus on my breath. And center myself in such a way that I can actually get through the day in a positive way instead of just being this machine that's just going and bouncing around from one thing to the next. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like getting ahead of the program instead of just putting out fires. It lets you do that and creates this kind of focus where tertiary things and secondary things are just that, tertiary and secondary, and you can focus on what needs to be done ahead of you.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, I would think that it would help reduce stress in your life, whatever you're facing, whatever you're going through, that it might help reduce whatever stress you're feeling.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I mentioned the word pranayama, and maybe I should clarify what that means. And basically, pranayama is just a practice where you're controlling your breath and equaling out your breath in and out of your body. So there's pranayamas that can heighten awareness, and there's pranayamas that can chill you out a little bit. I tend to go, with having 3 children, I tend to go for the chill out one.
Okay.
A little more,
as
much as possible, right?
Yes.
So, you know, those things can be accessed and be available to everyone just by taking a few minutes to just breathe a little bit and be in the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a hard part for people, is to live in the now or be in the moment, as you say. I mean, it's easy to think about the past or the future, but it's hard to actually just be in the now and accept what's happening right around you. Do you feel that that is true?
Oh, yes. I think there's so many layers of things kind of going on. You know, layers of the body, layers of external things, where it feels like you're being pulled in so many directions. But the reality of that is that you can control that. And I think people feel kind of like tossed in the wind, where they can't kind of come into themselves. And maybe that's scary at some point, but I think they would definitely be well served by doing so.
Mm-hmm. In the long run, it's going to help, correct?
Correct. Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now, when you work with the older people, I mean, do you have to take special care with them? I mean, obviously, you mentioned things. You work with heart patients and people with asthma. I guess you have to be conscious of the fact that you don't want to push them too far, because obviously you don't want any problems. Do you try to take that into consideration?
Correct. I'm not going to take an 80-year-old woman and start inversions like headstands and handstands. You know, so for instance, a adaptive yoga class might start off with sitting in a chair, where you're just raising and lowering your arms, moving the muscles of your neck, you know, touching your chin towards a shoulder just to add mobility to the neck, touching your chin to your chest, things of that nature. Maybe if the particular person has the mobility, maybe just holding on to the back of the chair as we extend out to do various yoga postures. Really, no matter what yoga posture you're doing, from the most advanced inversion to, you know, turning your chin towards your shoulder, there is a modification for it. Mm-hmm. And there's a way to build the practice in such a way that it's health, that maintains its health and maintains wellness in the body. Because really, contrary to kind of a Western kind of approach, you know, this, you know, if it's not hurting, then it's not doing anything.
Yeah, no pain, no gain.
Right, exactly. Then yoga is completely counterintuitive to yoga. You're always supposed to be challenging yourself, but never pushing past the limits and the boundaries as issued to you by your body in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't recommend, like I said, we wouldn't be doing handstands, you know, right off the bat.
Right. Well, that's a good thing, I guess. So if you're a beginning yoga student, someone comes to you or comes to an instructor, they're a new student, what would they typically go through to start with? I mean, I would imagine simple poses. They can't really do too much because they have to work into more and more stretching.
Right. So there's also this whole school of yoga called yin yoga and restorative yoga. And these are where you, in both types, restore the body. So essentially when you're in these postures, you're holding them for longer periods of time, and you're just waiting for the body to release and give you permission to move forward. And so when you have somebody who's nursing an injury, a restorative class is an excellent way to still work with the breath and work with the body without adding any kind of pain to the current situation or the current injury. And we really encourage that. I mean, back to the no pain, no gain. You know, I've had people who are very, very fit, and the classic I'm not coming to yoga excuse is I'm not flexible, right? I can't even touch my toes, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, go to yoga.
Yeah, right.
And then we'll fix that for you very slowly. And especially with, and we see this a lot, and any instructor that's out there listening will be able to testify this. You have these people that have been doing this particular activity for a long time, racquetball or running or whatever it is, and suddenly their body isn't performing the way that they're used to their body used to their body performing, and they're upset. You know, oh, my hamstrings are tight. Well, really, you've been running for 20 years. You know, your body mm-hmm. has performed this activity that you've requested it to do for this extended period of time. You just can't immediately switch it up and expect to have these loose hamstrings and these loose calves when you've, you know, been pounding the pavement for 25 mm-hmm. years. You know, you don't like to be yanked around and told one thing, you know, bam, bam, bam. You know, if someone were to ask you to do something, give your body the same respect that you would give anyone else. Like, it's its own separate entity.
Right. If you haven't done proper stretching over the years, it's going to catch up with you in a matter of time.
Sure, absolutely. And mm-hmm. But you want to know what? The body is so elastic and is so beautiful in so many ways. I mean, if you are interested in practicing, your body will eventually allow you to do the things that you're requesting it. But you have to build that trust. You just can't smack the body around and then expect, oh, yeah, sure, of course, I'll release my hamstrings for you now. You know, it doesn't mm-hmm. work that way. It doesn't work that way in life. It doesn't work that way on the mat.
Mm-hmm. Real briefly, I just wanted to remind everybody that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. This month, my special guest is Jessica Hillman. She is a yoga instructor. And one thing I want to know is, when you do yoga, just what you touched upon briefly, I think most people think you have to be some kind of contortionist to be able to do it. Now, that is not necessarily the case then, right? I mean, gradually you learn how to do it and become more flexible.
Well, being a contortionist helps. No.
I'm no. sure it would. But
no, but
most
that's
people
really,
aren't like that.
No, no, I know. I say jokingly. Yes, exactly. You start off at a level one, most basic class, and you do what you can. Mm-hmm. And we modify poses, and we adjust you. We want you to have a safe practice. We want you to continue to practice. The more people that are practicing and breathing and working their way into themselves, pretty much the better the world is going to be. So we highly encourage you getting on the mat, you know, three or four times a week, if at minimum.
Mm-hmm.
And what we really try to do too at the studio is really encourage a home practice. I mean, I especially with my moms, you know, your body is changing very rapidly to support this new life. And I highly encourage, before they even get out of bed, reach your hands up over your head, breathe into your belly. Get up on your hands and knees and just do a set of asanas called cat-cow just to work some energy into the spine. And then go on with your day. This doesn't have to be, you know, this two-hour practice of, you know, 8 million downward dogs and 20 minutes of meditation. Sure, that's great if you can do that, but mm-hmm. if you can take 5 minutes in the morning just to breathe a little bit and do a little stretching, you would still be very well served. And that's one of the nice things about yoga. The yoga bus will always turn around and pick you back up. So you have people who have things happen in their lives that make it impossible for them to get to class. And if you're like me at home, sometimes it's hard to practice at home because you have three little ones running around. But again, the yoga bus will pick you back up. Your practice can start right where it left off and still be just as meaningful, and maybe even more so, because you have that deeper appreciation for what it did for you in the past.
Mm-hmm. So you shouldn't judge yourself just because perhaps the person next to you is a little more limber and can do more things. You just have to be cognizant of yourself and what you can do and just go from there. Don't really be worried about, gee, I'm not doing what everybody else is doing, or I don't seem to be as limber as other people. You just start where you are and go from there. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Asking somebody to go into a yoga class that has never done yoga before is like asking a 10-year-old to do calculus. It mm-hmm. really is. So what we expect is that you just take the time when you're in class is to not be cognizant of the person next to you. Try to close your eyes as much as possible and pay attention to yourself. You don't know, that person next to you might be another yoga instructor. Mm-hmm. You don't know how long that person's practice has been or what led them up to this point. And so to sit in judgment of yourself again,
mm-hmm. as we all do,
it is not a good idea. So give yourself a break. Give your body a break. take your time to learn the postures appropriately so you're not injured. And that's what that's really the job of the yoga instructor, is to really monitor the class and make sure that the person that is engaging in their practice is doing it in a safe and healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
And I constantly am reminding people to, you know, even people that have been practicing for a long time, to, you know, extend this or drop that, or, you know, move this over, or pull your belly in a little bit more, it'll give you more power from the center, whatever the cue may be. And everyone can use those gentle reminders, but those type of things can help take your practice to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that people, when they come to you, they complain about aches and pains just on an everyday basis? Maybe they wake up with back pain or whatever, and do you think that by doing yoga and stretching that will help people so that when they wake up or go about their day's activities, they don't have that soreness?
Absolutely. Adding the oxygen to the body through the breath and the stretching of the muscles and getting fresh supplies of blood is always good for the body, always. And so having that practice available to you will help with the general aches and pains of life.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And then just being calm and being able to deal with it. There's also the mental portion of it as well, and being able to breathe through situations that will tighten the body and cause a response in the body. Just by staying with the breath will help you loosen things up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, I've said this 100 times probably, really, when you're in class and you're allowing the breath to kind of add to the practice, it really can be 50% of the practice. The breath can carry your practice. And so that's true when you're in class and when you're out of it as well.
Mm-hmm. So to practice yoga is just beneficial on a daily basis, and the breathing too helps relax you as well?
Absolutely. Definitely, if you're practicing pranayama, that breath control where you're controlling the breath, it will help keep you calm.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what you want it to do, because there's other practices that can increase energy. So if you're somebody who's not a self-starter and a go-getter, you can actually practice certain breaths that will actually give you more energy.
Mm-hmm.
So you talked about bottling energy a little earlier.
Mm-hmm. Just start breathing, right?
And we'll have you on a pranayama regimen before this hour is out.
Okay, yeah, great. Sounds good. I mean, does it affect all things in life? I mean, can it even help a person's sex life, things like that? I mean, can it just improve your overall life? How does it work?
Oh, you said the S word, and now I'm going to have to talk about it a little bit.
Okay.
So
let's not get too graphic here, but
okay,
go ahead.
Okay, I'll try to contain myself.
Yeah.
So I guess the question is, and then everyone can answer this for themselves, do you want to have sex with somebody who is comfortable with their body or somebody who's uncomfortable with their body?
Okay, well, let everybody answer that. I don't know what that would be.
So you can think about that, and then if you have somebody who's comfortable with their body, you can decide how things are going for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's how you answer that. So just in general, though, I guess the breathing and the movement all helps. How about the two-year-olds? How do you work with them? And again, I'm sure that they're probably a little antsy and they want to get up and run around and stuff, but you say you just let them be and...
So that's what we do. We do some poses. Actually, a lot of the asanas names, let me clarify it, an asana is a posture, are animal names. So we do a lot of animal named asanas, you know, cat and cow and donkey and dog and seal, and run around and expend some of that energy. I always leave my class, even with my littlest ones, with some, you know, we call it fingertip breathing, where they put their hands on their bellies and they move them towards their heart, and where they're just feeling that breath go in. You can be too, and be conscious of the fact that you're breathing, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, obviously I'm not doing an hour and a half
right.
Class, you know, it tends to be, you know, a little under an hour, but I think that they they enjoy it. They come back week after week. So that says to me that they're having a good time doing it and kind of being in touch with what's going on mm-hmm. in their bodies and with their breath.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would think that they probably think it's fun. I mean, doing the animal poses and stuff, they're pretending they are a cat or a dog or whatever the case may be. Do you find that to be true?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, it's a lot of fun. We have some moms that drop in on those classes, and we have requests for, you know, 25, 30-year-old women to come to kids yoga.
Oh, really?
Why they're like, wow, this is a lot of fun. I almost like this better than my own class, you know, so mm-hmm. it makes it interesting. And, of course, they're welcome to come in as well. I have had moms come in on my teen class because their time frame has fit with that class, and they enjoy it too, although they have to get past the really poor taste in music from some of my older girls.
Yeah, well, I guess you just have to live with that.
Yes.
Now, what are you associated with? It's a group called Yoga for Peace. Can you talk about that?
Yes, Yoga for Peace is a nonprofit. It's called a 501c3, and we offer yoga classes, as you can probably tell from this talk, from around 2 or 3 years old all the way up to, you know, 100, I guess. If you made it past 100, you can come too, I promise.
Yeah.
And basically what we do is we offer yoga to the community. And our classes are by donation, and we really felt strongly when we started this that yoga should be available to everyone. Yoga should be available to everyone regardless of gender, regardless of race, and then here comes the big one, age, and the even bigger one, ability to pay. So we do our classes strictly by donation.
Mm-hmm. Whatever a person feels they can pay, they give, and if they don't, it's not that big of a deal.
Yes, correct. We have a suggested donation. However, if there's someone that can't afford to take a class, it's important to us that they cultivate a practice, so mm-hmm. that is available to them.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever have people giving more than the suggested donation just to help others and to help the studio itself?
Yes, absolutely, and we're very appreciative of that. Some of the instructors as well donate their time mm-hmm. To teach and don't receive payment whatsoever for teaching their classes. We have a board that is doing everything by volunteer. We do community, a lot of other, this itself is community outreach, but we also do a community outreach program as well. We have people actually just click on, come across our website and donate that have never been to the studio, which is always appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
We're just trudging along, trying to do our best for the community.
Mm-hmm. So that's your goal, is to help the community and spread the word about yoga?
Absolutely, absolutely, mm-hmm. as much as possible, and be available mm-hmm. when you're ready to practice.
And how long has this been group together? I mean, you don't know, or it's been a while, or?
Okay, so we started off as a... it was called Rising Sun Yoga, and I want to say maybe 4 years ago we mm-hmm. switched over to the nonprofit. I might be a little bit sketchy on that time frame, but we've been running nonprofit for several years now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you must feel like you're doing good work, though. I mean, it's for the community, and you're helping improve people's lives, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. This definitely is soul work, in that the people that are volunteering their time and the people that are working there, I mean, you don't, you know, you're doing this. It's a lesson in love. It's an outreach of love, absolutely, that each of us is doing this.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the instructors have other jobs. We have instructors that also just only do this. So we're kind of an eclectic group, just really wanting to share our abilities and to help the community as a whole.
Mm-hmm. And you feel that you are doing this?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Well, that must be one of the things that attracted you to teaching yoga, wasn't it? The fact that, obviously, it's good for you personally, but also you can help other people.
Yes. I can show you when the show is over. My whole picture roll are of newborn babies. You know, I have tons of pictures of newborn babies from mothers who have emailed me and who've sent me email about how their practice helped them during delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And so, of course, when you see this new little person wrapped up in a blanket, you can't think anything but that your time was well spent and meaningful.
Mm-hmm. So they have reported that they have easier childbirths sometimes by
doing
yoga?
Yes, yes. And really, too, one of the things that I try to do in class is give them the tools in between yelling at whoever is in the room.
Oh, really?
There might be a little breath going on in there.
Uh-huh. So you do yell at people? Is that it?
No, I mean in the delivery room.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah, coaching or whatever. You know, come on, you can do it or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So do you practice with your own children as well? Do they do yoga or do you just let them be themselves and not really push it?
I don't push it, but they all three love it.
Really?
So before I left today, my littlest one, who's four, was doing a downward dog split and pulling it into plank. And I think it was last semester, they had a fitness day at my son's school. He's in middle school. And they did a piece on yoga and fitness day. And he came home and said, "Mom, you need to get in there," because they didn't know a down dog from an up dog. So I'm going to put your name forward so you can teach that next time, because this is important that people know the appropriate way. He didn't say appropriate, the right way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so
it's
they
good
all
that,
love it.
Right, but it's good that he realizes that and he just goes ahead and volunteers you know, unbeknownst to you.
That's
yeah.
fine. I'm used to being volunteered for things. It's
oh, really?
Fine.
Yeah.
He plays baseball too, and I do a lot of work with him in his baseball career.
Oh, it's a career?
Yeah, it feels like it sometimes when you're going to so many practices. I shouldn't say that, but...
Practices and travel leagues and whatever else?
He's not doing travel yet, but we're working on him.
Okay. Well, that's important. Again, you know, having done some athletics in the past, too, one of the things they say that helps is your breathing, and that when you get stressed out in a game situation, your breathing becomes more shallow, and sometimes you're not performing at your top level because you're not breathing right. The oxygen is not getting to your brain, which is not a good thing. So do you work with your son in that regard to help his athletic performance?
Yes, actually I do. It's kind of interesting. The other night we were at a game, and the pitcher was getting tired. The previous pitcher was getting tired, and he's 12 years old. So he's playing in an 11- and 12-year-old division. So the pitcher was getting tired, and he actually had two batters that he had hit, the previous pitcher. So my son goes in, and he kind of moseys out to the mound and starts warming up or whatever. So I'm in the stand yelling, "Breathe, breathe, power within, power within." And he's laughing, and, you know, he went in kind of a bad situation with bases loaded and no outs and then cleared the inning. So, you know, I think it helps him too, and he sees the effects, so of course he's going to want to do it if it helps his baseball performance.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, I'd imagine that just going through life, any type of stressful situation, whether it's a business situation or whatever, it always helps to breathe. Is that correct?
Oh, I think so, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you said, the more oxygen in your brain and the more oxygen in your muscles, for you scientists out there, you don't want your body to go into fermentation mode, right?
Mm-hmm.
You want to definitely have the tools, oxygen being one of them, to do what you need to do and do things appropriately, make the right decisions, you know, not kill yourself when you're walking the dog or bringing groceries in from the car into the house, you know.
Well, that probably explains a lot of my problems. It's just not enough oxygen to the brain, so that's what I'm going with anyway.
You seem
it's
like
my
you're
only
doing
excuse.
Fine.
Well, you know, I fool a lot of people, so you just never know. Now, you also have an event coming up. Would you like to talk about that? Yoga for Peace is sponsoring a special event?
Yes, actually we have this event coming up. It's called Unity in the Park. It is Saturday, September 28th of this year. It's from 11 to 4 at Kiwanis Park. and that is in Southgate, Michigan. You can purchase tickets online or at the studio, and because we are a nonprofit, our tickets are tax deductible. And what we're offering during the day is we have several yoga classes. We're doing live music. There's vendors. There's activities for children. So we're really hoping to bring the community out in full force to support and to have a little fun that day on that Saturday.
Mm-hmm. So it's definitely trying to raise as much as you can for an organization that's obviously very close to you and something you support by working at this and with this group. So basically, do you make quite a bit of money? I mean, I know this is only your second year, but has it helped you?
Yes, we're kind of in this kind of odd place right now where we need more space, but we're having a hard time finding another building that works for several different classes going on. So any kind of funds that we receive are greatly appreciated at this time as we're trying to transition into a different space.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully, a larger space?
Yes, we would like to have three. Right now we have two classrooms, and we would like to have three, and then so that we could continue to offer more classes and continue to do more community outreach as well.
Mm-hmm. Briefly, I just want to remind everybody once again that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Jessica Hillman. She's a yoga instructor, and right now we're discussing the fundraiser that Yoga for Peace will be having in the park. Do you actually practice yoga? You have yoga classes during this event?
Yes, we're doing three separate yoga classes, and we haven't actually completely worked out the details. One of our teachers that founded Yoga for Peace, who has subsequently moved up north to a retreat ranch. His name is Jim Pirro. He's coming down to do a special class. One of our other instructors, her name is Elizabeth Fairtag. She is doing a vinyasa flow. And then we also, because it's what we do, we're also doing an adaptive class with one of our instructors. Her name is Peg Darnell. Mm-hmm. So if you feel like you might not be able to handle a full-fledged vinyasa class, then we have that adaptive with Peg.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is going to be held outside, obviously. Is it in a pavilion, or is it just outside in the park?
Well, we have our fingers crossed for good weather, of course, and it will be held out in the park unless we have issues with the weather, and then we have tents and parts of the pavilion that will be available to us for vendors and for classes and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. So rain or shine is going on.
Rain or shine, it's going on.
Mm-hmm. Now, generally, though, it's free, right? You just, if you want to donate, you can, and support the vendors that are there. It's up to each individual.
Well, we're asking that each person actually buy a ticket. It's $20
okay.
Per person. I believe that children under 13 are free, and so bring the kids, of course. We love children. And that you can take your ticket price off your taxes. It's tax deductible mm-hmm. because we're a nonprofit.
Right. Very important, you know. Again, that's something we stress here at WHFR. We have a radiothon every year, and we try to stress the fact that, you know, your donation is tax deductible. Hopefully that will inspire people to go ahead and give. You know, it's obviously very important. Now, when you do yoga, what do you do to get ready for a class? Do you do anything special before you actually get in there and start teaching?
Well, I usually have an idea of, for teaching a class, I usually have an idea of what I'd like to focus on. And then when I walk into class, I ask the students that are in the class if they have anything particular, any particular issues that they would like to work on or address, and then I implement whatever their needs are into the class. So I kind of have a kind of a flow of what I'd like to have happen, and then I modify is basically what I do. And as far as for somebody who wants to prepare for a class, you just need to wear something comfortable. We have mats at the studio, and most other studios as well have mats available. And just keep an open mind, and we'll get you set up. Just make sure you have something that you can kind of stretch out in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but basically loose clothing is rather important as well, right?
Yeah. Something that you can tuck into, like if you have something, I don't want to say too loose, because if you're in a downward dog, you don't want your T-shirt flying back up into your face. So something you can tuck in, you know, or things
that
like that.
That would not be a good thing, I take it?
Yeah. You just be blind for a few minutes. If you're okay with that, then we're okay with it too.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, again, getting back to the fact that it really helps you stretch out, I think most people have the misconception that you do have to be very, very flexible to do it. But again, you're saying that it's something that will help people become more flexible, especially people that may want to do the running, you know, something like that in life. Maybe that helps them more and becomes a fact or a facet of better exercise.
Yes. To discuss and first talk about the flexibility issue. So generally when you're starting off in class, you can be on two or three blankets or maybe even a bolster, depending on what the hips and the thighs will allow. And eventually you'll find that you're from the bolster to a blank or two blankets, and then from two blankets to one blanket. Mm-hmm. And that's just the way that your practice builds. And that at some point, you know, I'm going to use this pose, the downward dog, as an example. You know, you start off very, very high up on your tippy toes, and eventually, once you get the signal from your body and it feels like it's ready, eventually those heels will hit the floor. And you want to know what, too? If your heels never hit the floor, that's not a big deal either. That's where your body's at that moment. I'm just saying that there is a progression in the practice. You can tell a difference, and of course I'm up and walking around. You can tell a difference between downward dog number one and downward dog number six when you're watching in a room. Mm-hmm. Just letting the breath take over and letting the movement take over and letting the body have that space to release. Even if those heels never hit the floor, there's always advancement.
Mm-hmm. How would you describe that pose? I mean, what do you do? You're saying touch your heels, but you're on your toes, and how does that work?
Okay, so a downward dog is, if you were starting off on all fours, you know, hands and knees, is you tip your tailbone up, and then you just gently press your thighs back towards like the back wall or
okay.
whatever. So
mm-hmm.
you actually, if you're using the floor as the bottom of a triangle, you almost look like a triangle with mm-hmm. your butt being at the highest point.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens is if you have tight hamstrings or shortened calf muscles, is that your heels won't be able to descend towards
right.
the mat or the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I meant by picking up those heels is your heels will be way, way high up in the air. It almost looks like you're wearing high heels, I guess, barefoot, you know,
mm-hmm.
which there's the position that your feet would be in.
Right. But eventually, again, things would, tendons or whatever would stretch out over time, and eventually you should be able to touch the floor with your heels in that position, correct? Hopefully, anyway.
But again, if that never happens, we're good with that too, and so should you be.
Mm-hmm. Right. Don't beat yourself up just because you can't do something that
maybe everybody else
is doing.
Maybe you've had an injury. Maybe, like I said, you've been running your entire life. Maybe you're still running, and so you need that muscle, you know,
mm-hmm.
to be strong and built and firm, you know. So it is what it is, and just enjoy the class, you know. So
mm-hmm. just enjoy the moment and just get into it as best you can.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're working with the young kids, do they seem pretty flexible? I would think that it's probably easy to work with them in that respect, because usually young kids are much more flexible than adults.
Are you kidding me? I would never. Well, that's one reason I wouldn't recommend an adult go to a kid's class, because it would be very bad for their self-esteem for yoga.
Yeah, that would not be a good thing. Okay.
You should see some of my teenage girls. They just, there's a pose, it's Hanumanasana, and it's the splits. What might kill the average person, these girls just reach right into it. You know, they have that flexibility and control over their bodies to do things like handstands and headstands and King dancers. You're balanced on one foot and you pull the other one back behind your head. And
okay, that hurts already.
I know.
I'm not even trying that.
And they can touch their heels to their heads and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's one reason to avoid a kid's class.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought it was interesting, though, some of the exercises you do with older people. I mean, just simple stretching. I mean, stretching or turning your head from side to side, doing simple things, you know, to start off with and then gradually build from there.
Yeah, exactly. We always start kind of on low and then kind of assess the energy of the room and then decide where the practice is going to go from there. I mean, you'll know when you look at a schedule. If something says level 3 and you've never done yoga before, some of it is you're going to have to kind of shepherd your way into a class. But if you see level 1 therapeutic, maybe that's for you. You know, you're like, I like therapeutic, you know.
Yeah, right. I like number 1.
Yeah. I like level 1 and therapeutic, and when you read the description, if it's, you know, yoga with one movement per breath and very athletic, you're going to say, maybe that's not for me, or maybe it is for me. You know, mm-hmm. If you're a runner and do a lot of cardio, then maybe that's a great class for you.
Right, or a dancer, or whatever the case, if you're a physical person.
Exactly, but if you're somebody who just wants the restorative benefits, we offer quite a few therapeutic classes throughout the week as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, where are you located at exactly?
We are located in lovely Southgate, Michigan at 13550 Dix Road. And our phone number, and I'll say it twice, is 734-282-9642. And we also have I said I was going to say the phone number twice, so let me say it again. 734-282-9642. And we also have a website, and it's Y, like the letter Y, 4, the number 4, peace, peace.org, where there's a list of instructors and a list of classes and class times and class descriptions.
Mm-hmm. Do those times rather change, dramatically from, say, month to month or anything like that, or is it pretty consistent?
We do changes monthly, but our times tend to stay the same. We try to, let's say a Monday evening, we try to always offer a couple athletic classes and a couple therapeutic. The schedule is a little less dense during the morning. There might be every other class is a therapeutic or an athletic, mm-hmm. but we definitely try to make sure that there's a nice balance so that we're addressing what the needs of the community are at any given point.
Mm-hmm. Are you open throughout the day or primarily just in the morning and later in the evening?
Oh, we start at 5:30 a.m. And to this, I would like to give a shout out to my friend Sue Pine, who has been teaching 5:30 a.m. yoga forever.
Yeah.
And in a staff meeting, she said it was a magical time, and we all said, we'll take your word for it.
Yeah, right. I'm still asleep at that time, so yes.
So we start at 5:30, and then after that, our classes usually start between 8 and 9, and then go throughout the day. Usually our last class goes in about 7:30, because we're talking about an hour to an hour and a half, 15 minutes-ish, by the time, you clean up and get out of there or whatever, so that you're not doing yoga at midnight, mm-hmm. although that might not be bad either.
That's right. That would be a quiet
salutation.
Time. Yeah, there you go. generally speaking, though, I mean, it's just an hour for each session?
Our classes run anywhere between an hour to an hour and 15 minutes, depending on the particular class. So, for instance, I am right at an hour with my kids. And some of the restorative classes will do that hour and 15 minutes because you're holding those poses longer,
mm-hmm.
Supported on a bolster, supported on blankets and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a little while for that tissue to kind of open up.
Yes. Does your husband practice yoga?
Oh, yes.
The whole family does it.
Yeah.
That's great.
He would say that he has been forced or or coerced. But, you know, a few years ago, actually it was 3 years ago at Easter, and I know because it was Easter and I remember this, he was having some lower back pain that became so excruciating, we ended up taking him to the hospital. And after doing an assessment and did some x-rays, and I think they also did a CAT scan, they said, "Do you know what yoga is?" They made the mistake of saying that when I was in the room. I'm like, "Yes, do you know any yoga instructors?"
He knows.
Yes, of course. You know, we've been married a long time, so mm-hmm. you still have to tease a little bit, keep things fresh. But anyway, so actually he knows a lot of yoga instructors. It was very interesting. And then mm-hmm. after he had a note from the doctor saying he had to try something, you know, mm-hmm. he started his yoga practice.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jessica, for being here. I appreciate it. Very interesting. Thank you for being here once again.
Oh, it was absolutely my pleasure.
Well, that's going to do it for another edition of Metaphysically Speaking. I do want to thank my guest once again, Jessica Hillman, for being here. She's a yoga instructor, and it's very interesting. All the different things, some of the poses, some of the benefits of yoga. I'm even thinking about maybe I'll give it a try, but that's a big maybe. You never know. But I do want to thank Brandon McKay also for producing this edition of Metaphysically Speaking. I always appreciate his help. And be sure to join me on the third Tuesday of every month for another edition of Metaphysically Speaking. Thank you for listening, and have a great day, everybody. This is Bill Mike Holloway inviting all of you loyal listeners to shake that thing with those rock and blues on the Go With The Flow Mike Holloway Show every Tuesday afternoon from 4 to 6 p.m. right here on WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Yeah!
This is WHFR Dearborn. Welcome to the Best of Broadway. I'm Joe, your host, for the next hour. And we have today's play is Fiddler on the Roof. The play was produced by Harold Prince and Richard Pilbrow. The book is by Joseph Stein. Music by Jerry Bock. Lyrics by Sheldon Harnick. It was directed and choreographed by Jerome Robbins. This is the British version from England, and this is stars Topol and Miriam Carlin. Now, the story of the play goes like this. The people of Amatevka, a small Jewish community in Tsarist Russia, wrest a precarious, simple living from the soil. Tevye, the milkman, a devout, humorous, ebullient man, tells how their strength derives from the age-old laws of tradition. In Tevye's home, Golda, his wife, and his five daughters are preparing for the Sabbath. Yenta, the matchmaker, arrives to tell Golda the butcher Lazar Wolf, a gross, middle-aged, wealthy widower, hopes to marry their eldest daughter, Zeitel. Golda is delighted but concerned that